Hello, welcome to Follow Life Past and Present. This is your host. Thanks for joining me today. Today we have a show where we cover an interview with Leroy Riggs. Leroy Riggs, born and raised in Paula, was in the military, did his 20 years in the military, retired from military, was in the Navy, Air Force, even was on the Midway at one point. What I wanted to talk to him today, or what I have on the interview today, is his work with the cable system that was created here in Paula in 1973. He talks about Chairman King Freeman at the time helping him out, and it was a great interview. I know when I was growing up, it kind of opened the doors for me as far as something to do at the house. Most of the time we were out running around on the streets or in the hills or across the river and stuff. But after the cable system was put in, well, there was actually a time where we had other things to do and could see other things, could see other cultures, could see cartoons, which was my interest at 9 years old. Also have a story by Racine Lasuwisque on medicines that were used in around the reservation and stuff. And that, of course, is told in the Pottenhill language, the language of the Kupena people. And we'll finish it up with a song from Kupa Song and Dance Group. The song is called Palaanga, which means from Pala. So first we're going to start off with a story of medicines. So kick back, relax, and enjoy the beautiful Pottenhill language, medicines, as told by Racine Lasuwisque.
No, yeah, but she put pana akoi a chicken of putting by panamokal. Ma, who would certainly cheer in a what you but a thick knuckle. Ma, pa ash nickel, pana akoi, ma, I wish my put a comfort for lean to papa to not put her by a colley. Ma, should put. Minchen atak a wulwai ikhanuk amai papa ke pa akam khal ku pa hachi pa awan pating ala pa ashpa ku ut pa chipa chaya wanai no tum hish me pa pakhanat kuan manapaya khua tingway panangukale. Machipa pa ika mahuwa om kalakal machipa kalaw lo to paki pa akwa o kalaw at chimayo wa machipa kalaw pa ishmi pa pa iwi ay pa manish pa yaya machipa kalaw na kesma wa ma pa kechipa ay ka wawiya ko ni kahasha pa pala huwa o huatataka. Much of a hung up hook sap, a whismuck on. Well, my thing of a woey honour. Let's see that. For the time being.
That was Medicines by Racine Lasuwisque, and it was also in the book Mula with Tom. And now we get into the interview with Leroy Riggs, and this is where We actually talked for a long time. We talked about a lot of different things, and I will share those with you later on. But at this time, I want to share the story of our cable system that was here in Paula. A lot of people don't know about our cable system, and some people used to talk about how our cable system wasn't very good. And in reality, we were one of the first reservations in the area to have our own cable system. People that grew up in Paula didn't realize that there's a lot to compare it to when you're comparing it to outside communities that have cable or satellite and stuff, that ours may not have been as good, especially after it was in operation for about 30 years. But then people started getting satellite and everything. Well, now this is the story of the beginnings of it, beginnings of when anybody had cable. Cable wasn't around for many years before we actually finally got it. So here it is, Leroy Riggs talking about the cable system. You know, Leroy Riggs was the original cable guy in Paula.
State your name and birthday.
All right, my name is Leroy James Riggs. My birthday is July 25th, 1929.
One area, too, that I want to go into is about the cable. I know you were the expert on that.
I was an instigator on that.
Oh, really? Instigator?
Oh, yeah. I was the one. I went to Kate, told him, I said, oh, well, how come we don't have cable TV here? He didn't. See, what they did, they had asked Lawrence Welk to put a system in before, I understand. And Lawrence Welk said, well, I got mine by myself. Let them get their own. He refused to help the Indians. So I just told King, and so King said, well, he said, I'll tell you what. I'll make you a one-man committee to find out about the cable. I said, okay. So I worked for Lawrence Welk at the time. And they had cable. So I found out who put the cable in. It was Mr. Bacon. So I got a hold of Mr. Bacon and went from there. And Mr. Bacon did it. It cost us, we gave up our per capita. That, you know, from the money from the gravel pit.
Uh-huh.
We sacrificed all that for the cable system. It cost us $50,000. But we went up and we put it in, and that was it. The night that it went in 1973, I think it was, you couldn't find nobody in the streets of Pala. Everybody was home. They didn't want to watch. At 12 channels. Wow! It was really, so I'll never forget that. I worked all day, that day, till 9 o'clock at night, hooking people up, going from house to house, hooking them up.
Now,
I had a bunch of people following me all over.
So who actually did, like, the building up on the hill and then all the way down?
Charlie Scott took a crew up there and built it. But he's dead now. But they went up there, they took up a cement mixer and everything, and they built it. But Bacon was behind putting up the towers, and I think they got the Marines helicopter to pull them up, you know, put them in.
Yeah, of course, you know, I wanted to ask you about the cable, because that's one of the things that kind of changed all of our lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was in existence for about 30 years until we got the satellites. And then the cable, in fact, I think everybody all across the United States, I think they got rid of the cable system and they're using satellite dishes now all over. Because the biggest trouble we had with the cable system was these mechanical gophers called backhoes. Every time they're digging up some place in the road or something, oh, my God. There was never anything. Constantly tearing up the cable.
Mm.
But I had to go and repair all the time. Anyway, some people bury the cable. Some people said, I'll just leave it on top of the ground. They didn't care.
Drive the car over it.
They didn't care.
And I know those little green boxes are little green.
All along the
missile
yeah.
silos.
Well, those were the hookups there. They had a little a distribution center there for you. You could hook up as many as four homes to one little thing, one little box. And we went from there, went out. We had people used to try and hook up themselves. Mm. You know, we had people that initially they had to pay $15 a month, I think it was. And some people wouldn't pay, but we had to disconnect them and they'd go and they'd hook themselves back up and everything. It was just it was constantly on the go. I mean, I really didn't care, you know, because I understood the people, you know.
Right.
They had the money, they don't, you know.
Right. And a lot of people didn't have the money back then.
No, they didn't.
On there. Now that's Cable Hill.
Oh, Mr. Bacon went up there one time. I think he took up his meter. The Marines helped him with a helicopter. He went all the hills in Pala to check the signal. Mm-hmm. So he found up there was the strongest signal. So we found, well, is this tribal land? And the King figured it out that one section up there where the towers are, that is tribal land. The rest of it is not. So they put the two towers up there. And we ran the cable down from there. Hand carried that cable. There was about, King got together about almost about 15 or 16 people. Said, you help us, we'll eat afterwards. So we had a whole bunch of guys on up there. And about every 50 feet or every 100 feet, they put the cable on their shoulder. It was a big, heavy cable. It was heavy. And they started walking down. King led the way, went all the way down, the heavy cable. It was really interesting.
How many, do you know the names of any of the other people that were in there?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
I know I was too young. It wasn't me.
I think Lovato's were in on it. But, you know, I can't remember. It's been so damn long.
Okay. I'll have to ask.
But the only one I remember, King was there. I remember him. You know, he was a leader of it, you know, leading us down. But it was really interesting. Everybody really pitched in and everybody helped, you know, getting that damn thing. And then we had, all total through the reservations, I think we had about 6 miles of cable laid underground.
Really?
Yeah. It's still there. I mean, not doing no good, but it's still there.
We find it every now and then, huh?
Oh, every now and then they'll dig up and they call the tribal hall and say, hey, we found some cable here. Oh, forget it, it's dead. it was really something. Oh, yeah, everybody got together, you know, helped with it, you know. They never complained about giving up their money from the gravel pit or anything, you know, because they thought it was worth it.
Well, I think it changed the lives of all of us.
Oh, my God, you better believe it. People were, especially the kids, they were watching those cartoons, you know.
Yeah,
it was really interesting, though, the way people went. But I'll never forget that night. It was about 9 o'clock when I finished up down by where King lived, down in the area down there. I finished up down there. But, oh, my God. People, they followed me like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, you know, going from house to house. And as I went from each house, I'd lose somebody. But I had to hook them all up. It was really interesting, though. Hook them up, I'd get them going and everything, you know, change. Said, well, there you are. Oh, man, just sit down. And they didn't want channel to watch. I said, damn, man, 12 channels, you know.
Yeah.
No, channel 6 was the main one that they got.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I don't know what channels they could get, but I know I talked to people, and they said channel 6 was the main one that they got. Mm. But other than that, I don't know what other. But channel 2 every once in a while would come in. That was the one from Los Angeles.
Where were you born?
Where? Yeah. Right here in Paula. Way down in the southwest corner, down there where Siva lives now.
Oh, you were born in that house.
I was born there.
Ah.
1929.
So whose house was that? Was that?
That belonged to my grandparents.
So who was the, what were the name of the grandparents that owned the house?
My, Caetano and Casilda Welmus. That's a familiar name. I grew up in Paula. What happened was, my grandmother died, and my grandfather was getting hard for him to take care of me, so they sent me away to Banning at St. Boniface Indian School for a couple of years. Then after that, my mother, she had to work, so they made arrangements that I went to, from there I went into Sherman, and I finished up my school in Sherman. But I had 1 year, in 1943, I didn't go to school in Sherman. I went to school in Fallbrook, my ninth grade. And I lived with Rosinda Nolaskas for that 1 year. I was on my own.
But
1943, the war was going on then.
Oh, okay.
But it was interesting for me because it was diversified. Then I went from there, I went back to Sherman, finally graduated from Sherman in 1947.
And how'd you like Sherman?
Oh, I loved it. I really loved it. I regretted the day I graduated and had to leave. I really liked it.
So, what classes did you like? Were your favorite classes?
Oh, I was in the band, and I loved the band, and I worked in the electrical shop. I liked both of those, electrical shop and being in the band, because when we were in the band, we used to get to go to different places in March. And one thing that I still have as a feather in my hat is, in 1945, we were selected to march in the Tournament of Roses in Pasadena. So I got to march in the Tournament of Roses in Pasadena, 1940. Oh, well, I didn't know what an honor it was at the time. But afterwards, I realized that, my God, you know, not everybody does that, you know.
Right.
So I got to march in the band, and we're marching down. And I remember, you know, and we memorized three marches where we didn't have to have music. We committed them to memory. And as we're going along, and every while you stop and you rest a few moments, then you just play again. I remember a comment by one of the people on the side. They said, why don't you start playing some music? We want to hear music. And I thought, my God, what's the matter with that guy that we just got done? You know? But anyway, it was really interesting. And there's roses, the flowers. Ooh, you could smell them for a mile.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, it was beautiful. That was one of the highlights of my time in Sherman. I played the trumpet. Yeah, I couldn't play a trumpet now if my life depended on it. No lip. You know, I got false teeth, too. You have to have good teeth. Okay. Surprising it may seem, but you do.
Okay.
But it was really interesting. I enjoyed my school days at Sherman. I'll never forget them as long as I live. What helped me with electrical when I was in the Navy, then I joined the Navy, and one week I went to Class A electrical school in San Diego, and 1 week I failed the test, and I don't know how to get out of it, so I had to go see the commanding officer, and he said, what happened to you, Riggs? I said, well, I'm going to tell you, sir, I'm going to tell you the truth. I said, I got a letter from my girl, and this is true. What I'm telling you, I got a letter from my girl who was in Nevada. She got pregnant by a Marine, and she wrote me a letter and wants me to marry her, and she's already pregnant. I said, sir, that really upset me. I couldn't even think straight. So they kept me in school. They let me go, you know. But it's true that, you know, boy, that takes some guts, you know that. But that girl, I knew her at Sherman anyway, you know.
Oh, okay.
And, I'm a sailor, and she married a get pregnant by a Marine, you know. Well, she lived up there where they got that Marine base up there in Nevada someplace.
Oh, okay. I don't know which one that
I
is.
I think it was near Hawthorne. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I tell you, that window.
I got, but anyway, to make a story short, so then I had, before that, I had an interview with a commanding officer. He said, sailor, he says, I'll guarantee you your next 2 years on this base if you become a yeoman. I didn't want to be no yeoman. I said, no, sir. I said, I don't want to sit on a desk. I said, I want to go on a ship. I want to go out to sea. He said, okay. He would have guaranteed me 2 years of shore duty. Which a lot of sailors, boy, they jump on it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want shore duty. I wanted to go out to sea, you know.
Right.
I started college in Riverside, and I couldn't hack it. I had to do something, you know. I found out that I was homeless. Okay. I couldn't believe I was homeless. I didn't know what the hell to do, where to go, or anything. So I went right out of there. I went to join the Navy, and I would have went in any military. I went first in the Army Air Force office. Excuse me, there was nobody there. I said, well, I'll go to the next one. The next door was the Navy. And just as I was walking in, the chief was walking out, getting ready to go eat dinner. And he looked at me and said, can I help you? I said, sure, I'd like to join the Navy. I said, come on in, come on in. He invited me in. I took my test, and I passed my test.
Okay, cool.
And my GCT score was 55. Which is pretty good. The minimum was 45, and I made it with 55. So I got in. It was really interesting, though. I'll tell you my mother's name, Rosalina Walmus. Okay. That's my mother's name. And what I know, way I understand, my father's name was Leland Riggs. No, I never met him. No, he was in the Navy. He's dead now. God rest his soul. He's buried in Pearl Harbor. Yeah, he was in the Second World War.
Okay. Did your mom speak Indian?
No, my mother spoke English and Spanish.
Okay.
And she knew a few words in Indian. You know, she could handle it with my grandparents because my grandmother spoke Indian. But my mother could handle it. You know, she knew what was going on with the language. But when I was a little boy growing up, my grandmother used to speak to me quite a bit in Indian. And I used to understand what she was saying, but after I left it, it left me, the language, I lost it. My mother had to work.
Yeah. Where'd she work at?
Well, what she did was they used to have this Indian agents that come around to the reservations, and he used to make arrangements for the girls to work in different places in the cities. So she had a job, and she worked for a doctor in Carlsbad named Dr. Reed. She used to a maid, you know. Mm-hmm. She cooked, cleaned. She done everything. But that's what she worked. At a whole $35 a month. That's a lot of... $35 a month.
Wow. Did she go to school? She go to Sherman?
She went to Sherman, yeah. But she didn't graduate, though.
All right. Well, go into military then. So you enlisted and you passed your test. Where did you go to from there?
From there, we went up one morning. And I was staying with a man named Harold Barris, who was a basketball coach at Sherman at the time. I went to Riverside, and there was four of us. We got in the car, and the chief that was in charge drove us all the way to Los Angeles in his own private car. We got to Los Angeles, and that's where I got sworn in. And my first meal in the Navy was beans, Navy beans. Man, I was hungry, though. And from that day, we got sworn in, got our physicals, and they put us on a train and went straight to San Diego that same day to boot camp.
Miramar?
No, we went to a naval base, a training base in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
It's not there no more. It's a Marine base now. Well, after I graduated from boot camp, I went to school, and I finished school. I got assigned to the USS Amphion, AR-13, in Norfolk, Virginia. I looked at my name was on the list. I said, Norfolk, Virginia. I said, where in the hell is Norfolk, Virginia? So they told me, I talked to some guy, oh, that's back in the East Coast of Virginia, a big naval base. I said, wow. So after I graduated from Class A Electrical School in San Diego, there was four of us. This one guy was in charge of us, and we went to the air base there in San Diego. We picked up a plane, went from there to Texas, refueled. Then from Texas, we went to Florida and refueled. And from Florida up to Washington, D.C. And we got in Washington, D.C., got on a C-47, flew us down to Norfolk. And there we got on a bus and went to Fleet Landing. I got on a boat and went to my ship. Everything seemed like it was prearranged. It was really something. They really did. They had their act together. You know, the Amphion. That's the AR-13. It was a repair ship. I put 2 years on there. Then I got transferred there to the Midway. In 1950, I got transferred to the Midway when they had the big deal in Korea, the war in Korea.
And you're on the Midway the entire time?
4 years. We went to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, twice for shakedown cruises. And I hit Newfoundland. We hit Scotland, beautiful country, Scotland. Then we hit Spain, it was Italy, North Africa, and Algiers. I went to Lebanon and a place called Fumagusta, and there in the Mediterranean. And then an island called Sardinia. They don't make sardines there, though. It's called Sardinia. And Gibraltar. And in Gulf Juan, France, which is near Nice, France, we hit all those French ports and Italian ports, Naples, Italy, Genoa, all of them, been all over the Mediterranean. Oh, in Greece, that was an interesting country, Greece. I went on a tour there to see the Acropolis, all of, you know, where that big building is on top of the mountain, all the big pillars.
Right.
You see pictures of it. I went on a tour there, got to see all that. It cost me a whole $4 to go on the tour. But it was really interesting because the guide told us the whole history of it and everything, you know, all the wars they had in Greece and everything. And when we got liberty over there, we were allowed on about 2 or 3 hours, and that was it. We had to return back to the ship. They give you much time.
Do you ever go drinking?
I got drunk. Let me see. When was it? I got drunk, I think, one time. But that was when I was in Norfolk aboard the Amphion. We had an LCM boat where you, and I laid on the deck. And when I got by the ship, I looked at my white uniform, all dirty, diesel oil and everything. I said, well, that's it, no more for me.
Oh, really?
So I quit. I said, never again. In the Air Force, I drank a few times, but only one time in the Air Force. I go in the Air Force later, but when we were in there in the Air Force, and we went ashore one time, and we're sitting there drinking. I was just zipping it, you know, and then all of a sudden I came to, I was outside the bar down by what they call a clong, a ditch, and I was shaking my head. I looked around and said, where am I? And to this day, I do not know how I got from the bar to there. I don't remember nothing.
Wow.
But a lot of the air police were coming with the sirens heading towards the bar. But I was outside, so one of the sergeants I knew said, you all right? I said, yeah. He said, you want to go back to base? I said, yeah. So we called over what they call the Samlars, these bikes, these guys that drove the bikes. They call them Samlars. They're rickshaws, they call them in the Chinese. Uh-huh. But there they call them Samlars. So I got one of those, and they took me back to the base. And I don't know what happened to me. I think they slipped me a Mickey. Oh, they done that a lot. During the Korean. In fact, at the time we were there, they were having trouble over in Turkey. And they were afraid there was going to be a war breakout over there in Turkey. So we were always on alert, you know, ready. Because we had all the planes and everything on our ship, and we were constantly patrolling the Mediterranean. We're ready any time because they thought, but it never materialized, or nothing ever happened. They had a lot of trouble over in Turkey at that time. But they don't have that trouble anymore. Oh, yeah. I told you I've been in France, yeah. I've been to France. Several times. I had a chance to go to different places, but I never went. Okay, when I was in France, I had a chance to go to Paris, and I didn't do it. And when we were in Naples, I had a chance to go to Rome, but I didn't go because I was trying to save my money to get married. It was only $25 for 3 days. That was a tour, food and everything, lodging and all, for only $25. Back then, yeah. Now, probably 2,500.
All right, that was Leroy Riggs. And now we got time for a couple of songs. So we're going to start this off with Kupa Song and Dance Group singing the song Pala Anga, which means from Pala. So this is Eric Ortega of Paula Life Past and Present, getting ready to sign off. If you have any questions, comments, opinions, or ideas for interviews, give me a call, 760-742-4200, or you can email me at 91.3@paulatribe.com. And this is Eric Ortega saying, Ichang. Thank you.